This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Experience the difference at Woodhouse Buick GMC. From the GMC Acadia to the Buick Encore, we're sure to have a vehicle that fits your lifestyle. Our climate-controlled showroom guarantees a comfortable shopping experience every time you visit. Plus, our commitment to our customers continues well beyond the date of purchase. You will leave our lot feeling comfortable and confident in your new vehicle. Start your car buying journey today, in-store or online at WoodhouseBuickGMC.com. We are professional grade.
This is how it's always been. I'm on the outside looking in.
Hello, and welcome to a very special Christmas episode.
I've got bells and I'm really excited.
Gavin's got the jingle bells. It's dangerous. I'm going to put down the ukulele in case I'm tempted to start playing it. Welcome to Double Love.
Yay! It's Christmas!
It's Christmas! And it's the podcast that explores the strange and terrifying world of Sweet Valley High, book by book. And tonight, it is a very special episode.
Ooh, it's good.
It's not just because it's Christmas. It's because this book is... The Sweet Valley Saga, The Wakefields of Sweet Valley. And I'm going to give you the front title, or front tag, which is just Five Generations. Can you read the back subhead?
Okay. Oh, this is going to be great.
So it's just a...
Follow the riveting stories of the women who came before Jessica and Elizabeth Wakefield. Who are they?
Well, I'll tell you, because the rest of the blurb reveals who they are.
Mm.
And they're quite a crew.
A motley crew.
Motley indeed. Okay. Alice Larson, a bold 16-year-old from Sweden. Not bold in the Irish sense.
No.
Bold in the Irish sense is sort of like naughty.
Yeah.
Cheeky. She's bold in this brave sense.
Yes.
Anyway, she arrives alone in America to start a new life, but with a broken heart.
Aww.
Headstrong frontier tomboy Jessamine runs away to join the circus, leading her sensitive twin, Elizabeth, into a desperate search that ends in tragedy. Spirited twins and rivals, Samantha and Amanda, battle for the love of the same boy, during the glamorous Roaring Twenties, see?
OTG.
Oh, so much OTG. Marjorie, stranded in France during World War II, becomes a heroine of the Resistance.
Ooh.
Alice Robertson, child of the tumultuous 60s, makes a painful romantic choice she will hide forever, even from her twin daughters. Elizabeth and Jessica Wakefield.
Oh my God.
Discover the lives and loves of these extraordinary young women in the biggest, best Sweet Valley story ever.
Oh my God!
I just thumped the book
this
down.
This is serious, people.
It's so serious. I need to jingle the jingle bells in their honor. And to celebrate this book, we have got a culinary experiment going on.
Oh yeah.
So, Karen, can you explain?
It is going down in the studio today. Thanks to listener Elizabeth Keeney over in America and her mom Penny, who very kindly...
Thank you, Penny and Elizabeth.
They sent us onion soup mix so we can make the dip that we made fun of.
That Jessica has to make in Dear Sister.
That's right, yeah.
And we've made it.
We did. We made it.
Made it in the kitchen of the studio.
This is so exciting.
You should have seen us. And we are going to try it now. It's been sitting there on the table. So we're not going to eat in the microphone.
Yeah, that's probably not very good radio, is it? It's like, nom, nom.
Load load it up.
Go. We're eating it with tortilla chips because we figured they'd be more load-bearing.
Okay. Yeah. Oh. How much we do? Okay, I'm going to lean away from the mic.
Okay.
Oh my God. How is this true? It's delicious.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry. I don't want it to be just eating, but I'm going to eat some more.
Enjoy the podcast, everyone. Yum, yum, yum. Just us eating tortilla chips and onion dip for an hour.
Oh my God. I need one more.
Dude, it's get stuck. That is surprisingly really tasty.
How would you describe what I eat another tortilla chip?
Okay.
How would you describe the taste of this substance?
Yeah. So when we made it, it's basically sour cream. And this onion soup mix, which is technically a bag of salt with onion bits in it. And it might not sound very nice.
Or look very nice.
Well, yeah, but like it works.
Oh my God, so good.
Like it's really creamy and tasty. Like it's...
And salty.
So it's really salty.
Very salty.
It's so bad for us, which is why it's so nice.
We're probably going to have a heart attack by the time this ends.
Worth it.
But I have to keep just like pausing this.
Yeah, so I guess this means we have to make another apology.
Yes.
Sorry, guys.
Sorry, Jessica.
Turns out your onion dip is really nice.
It is amazing.
Shock twist.
I'm genuinely sorry. I can't just sit there and eat it, but it would be unlistenable. It would just
it would not make for a good episode.
Slurping and chomping away.
So yeah, it's our little onion dip party for Christmas.
Yeah, we'll have a little bit more onion dip between...
Between eras, maybe. Yes. Onion dip break.
So, speaking of eras, the story starts... In 1866.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I kind of made the comment earlier that this is basically Blackadder with Wakefields.
It really is. Although, I can't believe it didn't strike me before.
It's not really about the Wakefields at all, though, is it? Because it's Alice's family tree.
Yeah. And so none of them are Wakefields. No. So why is it called the Wakefields in Sweet Valley?
A misnomer.
Yeah. Yes. They've got a lot of different surnames. Mm. There's Watson.
Yeah.
At some stage.
There is.
There's Larson.
Robertson. Larson. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's basically Sweet Valley Blackadder.
Yes. And I think we need to describe the cover.
Oh, God. Yes, we do.
Because it has to be seen to be believed.
Yeah, we're going to have to put up a proper photo of it.
It is a fold out cover. It's sort of like a gatefold sleeve, except it's like half the cover folds out.
Yeah, like it looks like there's just one kind of strip of like faces down the side, but then it's like you open it out and there's so much extra stuff.
Oh my God. Oh, so please tell us what there is in there.
So it starts off with, I guess this is Alice, the woman at the start who's the...
She's Victorian.
She's like a Swedish immigrant coming across on the ship to the New World.
A ship entirely populated by... Nordic types.
Yeah.
I think there's one Irish person on it.
I think that there's a McCarthy in there somewhere.
Yeah. There's no one from Southern Europe.
It's her with all these kind of ships and ports and stuff in the background. Yeah. It's all very...
She's in New York City.
She is. Then we move across and I guess this is Jessamine.
Yes. I don't know why I find that name so funny.
It's pretty
funny. Sorry to anyone who's called Jessamine who's listening. I think it's just because it's so like, we won't call her Jessica.
Yeah, yeah. What's the closest we can get to
Jessamine?
While also being old timey.
So she's riding a horse.
She's riding a horse. It's like a train in the background. It's all very frontier-y looking.
Yeah, a circus train, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. I guess it must be. Yeah.
She does one weight show in the circus. And then below that,
it's
the Roaring Twenties.
Oh, yeah. I guess this is Samantha, probably.
She looks about 45.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
Like, I'm 42, so I'm not dissing.
Yeah, no one ever looks like they're 16, though, on these covers.
True. Though, and as we see in the pictures, that there's the sort of portraits of different Wakefields, or not Wakefields.
I guess the Larson women. We'll go with Larson, because that's
the founder of their...
She started it.
Of their dynasty.
This is her fault. So...
Blame Alice.
Yeah.
Original Alice. Yeah. So, they all look exactly the same.
Oh, yeah, they all have the same face.
Yeah, which suggests a worrying amount of inbreeding.
Yeah, that doesn't happen by accident, lads.
Yeah, it's like they literally look identical.
It is the same.
Get some fresh genes
with different hair
into that mix.
Please.
So yeah, to go to the founder of the feast, so to speak.
Yeah,
it's Alice, and she's going to America.
Yay!
But showing the trademark Wakefield bravery, she saves a child.
Yeah,
falls off a ship.
That's kind of the very first thing that happens, isn't it? It's like a little boy falls off the ship during a storm and she's just like straight in there, jumps in to save him.
And she's rescued. She nearly drowns.
She does.
Because it's stormy seas.
Yeah.
But she's rescued by somebody called Theodore Wakefield. And I remember when I first read this, I was just like, what? Hang on, what are they doing with this? Are they going to suggest that like the Wakefields are the product of, you know, like six generations of brother-sister incest or something, like the ancient pharaohs?
Oh, God.
How is their ancestor a Wakefield and somebody who looks exactly like Alice? This is so wrong. But this is setting us up for the sort of trope.
The theme of the book, kind of,
Which is that clearly somebody, a Larson and a Wakefield are meant to be together.
Yes, they're destined, but something always gets in the way. And
until.
It's like a lot of near misses until.
Yes,
until
you know
the
what.
End. Yes.
So, yeah, they, as the narrator from Jane the Virgin would say, they fall in love. And they fall in love very quickly.
Oh.
And he whittles her a rose.
Oh, yeah.
Little woman flower.
It's quite sweet.
Yeah. And this rose will carry on through the generations.
Yeah, and it's quite cute actually, because she doesn't have much English, because she's after coming over from Sweden, and he got on the boat in England.
Yeah,
so,
he is English,
yeah, so he's an English
he's
dude.
An uber wasp.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
They're in. Yeah, like no non-wasps get a chance to marry into this family. I'm just telling you, one almost does, that he gets shot by the Nazis.
That's what he gets. Sorry.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
But yeah, they fall in love, and then she dresses up in finery to impress him, which is quite cute. She borrows stuff from all the other girls,
all the other women
ship.
On the boat. Yeah,
And we find out quite randomly that Theo loves the circus.
Yeah,
That's going to become relevant later.
Yeah, that will come back.
So they arrive in New York City, but they're separated at Ellis Island because he's put into quarantine for possibly having typhus.
Typhus, yeah. Because they had said they were going to get married when they got to America and they would live their lives as Americans.
Oh, yeah. Like they're not going to get married on the ship by the captain or whatever. She comes back like to the port every day with her Aunt Elizabeth. There's no sign of Theo.
Yeah,
so she has to
it's
give
quite
up.
Sad. It's just like they had their little moment and then
he's vanished.
They just sort of lost each other. Yeah, because she doesn't know that he's been carted off to a hospital to be in quarantine.
Yep.
She doesn't know. It's not like he can text her or anything. So yeah, it's all quite like, oh, you guys.
Yeah.
Star-crossed lovers.
And there's no way that they can find each other.
Yeah.
So she has to go off with her aunt and uncle and they go off to Minnesota.
They're moving out west.
Yep. To take advantage of genocide, though that is actually mentioned. I was going to say that isn't, but it actually is.
Yeah.
So, they go off. She marries somebody else. And by the way, the message of this book is that all the women in this family marry second best.
Yeah,
they're all
heartbroken and then settle.
They settle. It's like,
they never get the guy they really want.
Yes. And actually, she has a real tragedy in her life. She has a little boy called Stephen.
Yeah.
Who dies?
He gets scarlet fever, I think.
Yeah. But then she has Jessamine and Elizabeth.
Little twins.
Yeah. And, oh, by the way, wow, this is so tedious. The neighbouring farm belongs to Jim Wilkins.
Ooh.
So
where's that going to go?
Yeah. Get worried there as well.
But also, the thing with the twins, it's like, how we tell them apart? And it's like, baby Elizabeth has a mole on her shoulder.
What?
Yeah.
I mean, what are the odds of that happening?
Yeah. Like,
good Lord.
Unlikely.
So, 7 years later, the kids are just running wild in a good way.
Yeah.
And Jessamine is obsessed with the circus.
Yeah, she's much more daring than Elizabeth.
Yes. And she's really wants to go to the circus, and her parents take her, and Alice Larson hears that there is an animal tamer at the circus called the great Theo W, who can talk to the animals.
Oh my God.
Like Dr. Doolittle.
Could it be?
Yeah. She goes back to the circus the next day to find him.
Yeah. But the circus is gone.
No.
Why?
She's kind of relieved.
Yeah.
Because I think it would be too much if she saw.
Yeah, because she is actually happy. Like, she does. She loves her husband. She's had her twins. Yeah. She's actually grand, but it was just like, what if?
That her husband is a bit of a, like nothing, you know, I can't even remember what his name is. I didn't even write it down in my notes. So,
is it George?
Oh, that sounds about right. Else? Yeah, there is a George.
Was there another George?
No, I think that's him. So now the twins are teenagers. They're taking part in a corn husking bee.
Yeah.
Don't really know what that is. Is it doing something to corn, obviously?
With corn, I guess.
And there's a sort of nasty boy called Bobby Tyrus. Ugh. And he mocks Jessamine's tomboyish ways.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Elizabeth has Ryan another boy, Tom Wilkins.
It's so contrived.
I just have, for fuck's sake, written in my notes.
And rightly so.
And Tom gets the red ear of corn in a husking. Don't really know what that is, but sure, it's some sort of agricultural thing. And as a prize, got to kiss any girl he likes.
That's a bit weird, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Appropriate. He kisses Elizabeth.
Yeah.
And she falls in love. Meanwhile, Jess is, quote, showering boys with silvery peals of laughter.
Oh, the classic silvery peals.
Yeah, exactly. Genetic, apparently. So Jessica has dreams.
Jessamine.
Oh, Jessamine!
In fairness, she's basically like frontier Jessica, so
yes.
It's forgivable
yes,
to mix it up
true.
In fairness.
She's not as much of a Jessica as the next generation.
Yeah, that's true. She's just kind of wild and
free spirit.
Yeah, she is. And they kind of make a comment about how she's going to be a suffragist. And it's like, yeah.
Yeah, I
will. Good for you, Jessamine.
And she gets riding lessons from a Native American guy, an elderly guy called Peter Bluecloud.
Yeah.
And who actually does mention the genocide of Native Americans.
Yeah.
So, like, fair play.
Yeah.
Peter, you know, Peter Bluecloud for, you know, not making Jessica feel comfortable about being part
Get
of...
Get your digs in.
Yeah. And he just, you know, in fairness to her, doesn't argue with them.
Yeah.
She doesn't say, well, we have a right to be here. She's just like...
I know, yeah.
Okay. So he teaches her how to ride.
Mm.
Meanwhile, she is still obsessed with the circus and she runs away with the circus.
Yeah.
Keeps disguising herself as a boy to just go and visit it. And one day she just goes off with it.
She's out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's a bit harsh on her parents. Like, she literally just leaves them notes.
Yeah.
It's like,
see ya.
Yeah. I'm off.
Even saying goodbye even properly. Like,
I'm not even moving to a place you can find me.
No, just like leaves a note out of there.
Ride the rails. And then, oh God, this is, you know, they might have old Peter Bluecloud dropping some truth bombs. In a quite stereotypical way, but he does drop them, about the abuse of Native Americans. But then we get old Matthew, the toothless former slave.
Ooh.
And Elizabeth offers to teach him, and of course he's like, he's childlike and he worships Elizabeth. And when she offers to teach him to read, his lined face lights up like a child. Would you, Miss Elizabeth?
Oh.
Would you really? Like, give him some dignity, for God's sake.
Oh, but like, bad and all as these depictions are, like, this kind of 1800s frontier version of Sweet Valley is more diverse.
I know.
Than 1980s Sweet Valley, California. Like, what the fuck, lads?
So far, people of colour. And how many pages are we in there?
We're about 50.
Yeah. They have more speaking lines than, and this is true of the whole book, than in every, like, all the books we've read so far put together.
Yeah.
They literally do.
Yeah.
So that is saying something.
Oh.
Good Lord.
Something unpleasant.
Yeah. So Jess is gone. Liz bonds with Peter Bluecloud and Matthew, this is very, very dodgy, he compares Jess finding her freedom with his emancipation from slavery. Like, that is not cool, Sweet Valley writers. Like, do not equate a beloved, well-treated white girl running away with the circus with somebody being freed from chattel slavery. Like, it was, oh good Lord. Anyway, Elizabeth, she channels Jessamine's sass in school. Like, she stands up for herself a bit more.
Yeah, like, she really misses her sister. Because it is kind of shit that she just bailed, basically.
Yeah, just fucked off in a train, circus train.
That's harsh.
But then Peter Bluecloud is dying.
Yeah.
So Liz rides the rails, hobo style.
Yeah, she's going to find her sister. Because she's no idea where she is. Yeah. The circus just kind of goes from town to town.
She just, like, literally, like, stows away in a train.
Yeah. She actually finds her pretty quickly, though, in fairness, doesn't she?
Like,
it doesn't
seem
like it's taken very long for this to happen.
It's quite unconvincing.
Yeah.
So she finds her and she gets to see the circus and she's like, oh, this is cool. But then something happens. It's not good. She has a go on the horse.
Yeah, because she's been learning how to ride the horse. Like, oh yeah, because Jessamine is like a... She's like, she rides the horses bareback and does like tricks and stuff and like jumps through hoops and all kinds of cool stuff like that. Which actually sounds pretty deadly.
It does sound pretty cool.
It's quite impressive. Yes. And Elizabeth has been kind of learning some of that stuff, not the super tricksy stuff, but like just riding around. So yeah, she has a go on the horse.
That and it's a circus horse.
Jessamine has been using, yeah. Doesn't go too well though.
No, she's thrown off the horse. And she dies.
That's it. She's like, what?
She literally dies.
Yeah.
A twin and a twin that looks like a Wakefield twin dies.
Uh-oh.
So, cush to 1900. It's San Francisco. It's New Year. Jess is running a hotel.
Yeah.
She's the toast of the town.
She sure is.
Other customers fall in love with her and sometimes she goes out and dates with them. Now, I'm judging by the standards of 1900. That would not be a respectable hotel.
No, it really wouldn't. Because she's only like 22 or so at this stage as well. And it's just like, so she's running, it's like a single woman running the hotel on her own. Like
going on dates
absolutely
with them.
Good for her. But at the time, don't think that would have gone down too well.
No, it really wouldn't have. She's greeted by a handsome man.
Yeah, it's New Year's Eve and she's up on the balcony and there's a guy in a shiny automobile. Check this out.
I know, I kind of expected that the license plate would be one Bruce. It's the original Bruce, but it isn't Bruce. Although, I don't know, I can't even begin to go into the Bruce connections because they're coming soon. It's cutting to 5 years later and she's engaged to the guy who greeted her from the automobile.
Yeah, he's a dude called Taylor Watson of Watson Motor Company.
Yes, Taylor Watson. Now, that's a waspy name. Never heard one. And she's sort of engaged to him. She's agreed to wear his ring.
Because she's kind of not sure what she's at really like.
No. And especially when he introduces her to his sexy car racing partner, whose name is Bruce.
Amazing.
Bruce Farber, that is.
So good.
And she fancies him straight away.
Yeah, he's really like dashing and suave. And,
yeah.
Like he's a dickhead, sassy. So of course she's into him.
He's Bruce, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. He's 1900s Bruce.
Edwardian Bruce.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's like racing the cars that Taylor makes or something for like publicity like, for the
yeah
the
he's
company.
Like Taylor's like the equivalent of, you know, Ferrari sponsoring a racing driver and he's a bit more exciting than boring old Taylor. And then so a year later, 1906, her and Bruce are out on a picnic
canoodling up on a hill.
Bruce demands that she choose between him and Taylor. So she's been sort of stringing Taylor along for like an entire year. Like, that is not cool, Jessica.
No, it's not good. Jessamine.
No, Jessamine. Oh, my Lord.
Well, they're really tricking you now with Bruce thrown into the mix as well.
Exactly. They're messing with my head. So they're on a picnic where she abandons herself to his spell.
Ooh. What were they up to?
Oh, the earth ship moves.
Oh no.
Literally.
But literally.
Because it's the 1906 San Francisco earthquake. Bruce wants to flee.
Yeah, he's like bailing on there and she's like, no, I have to check out my hotel. There's people in there, like my guests. God damn.
And she says that if Bruce goes back with her, she'll choose him.
Yeah.
So it does not seem like a sensible way to pick a husband.
Oh no.
Anyway.
Not at all.
So they get back to the hotel and it's sort of destroyed.
Yeah, like the half, like the wall is missing off the side of it and it's kind of starting to catch fire.
Yeah. And no lady is trapped.
Uh-oh.
She's like, Bruce, go in and save her. She's volunteered to go in herself, by my dad, even though she's be a bareback rider, so she's quite...
Actually, she's quite like daring. And, she's
well
able.
She can just swing herself up there. Like. But anyway, Bruce is like, oh, it's too dangerous. But then he goes in.
Yeah.
Which is the right thing. This is the thing. He does go in there.
It takes a bit of convincing, but he does.
Yeah. Goes into a burning building that's going to fall down. Exactly. Yeah. That is quite brave.
Yeah.
So Taylor arrives, and of course, he runs in. And between him and Bruce and Taylor, they save the old lady.
Yes.
But then Taylor's trapped. Something falls down or something.
It's
quite convoluted.
It kind of is.
And Taylor is like, oh, save yourself. Take the old lady
go
out.
Go on without me.
Sensible, because someone's got to get the old lady out. You can't get out by yourself.
Yeah.
So Bruce goes downstairs and he gets the old lady out, but then he's trapped.
Yeah, and like in the meantime, Taylor has managed to get out because that, just, like the wall is gone off the side
so
of the building.
Just jumped
so he can
out.
Just kind of like fall
really...
out or something.
Yeah, and he's fine.
He gets out anyway and he's
and
grand.
He's like, oh, but Bruce is trapped. By the way, Bruce has saved an old lady and Earl Chiron.
Yeah, yeah, because she came out on her own and it was like, oh shit, where's Bruce?
Yeah.
So then, but then Taylor is like immediately,
I'll
oh no,
save him.
Bruce. And he kind of runs in. So I suppose he's more heroic in this whole thing in that he doesn't think twice and just kind of
yeah, that's
runs
true.
In, whereas Bruce kind of needs to be convinced each time to actually
yes.
do the right thing.
That
whatever.
Is true.
Yeah.
So Jess chooses him.
Yeah, she kind of figures Taylor is the man for him. For him? For her.
For her. So many
now,
people.
If Taylor and Bruce got together, that'd
yeah,
be
yeah.
that'd be more
Let's
interesting.
Make that yeah. Though then of course Jessica and Elizabeth
that ends the family tree there, yeah. doesn't it? A little bit.
Jessica and Elizabeth would not exist yeah. because Taylor and Jessamine marry and move to Detroit.
They do, yes. The home of the automobile industry.
Yep. And they have twins.
Yay!
Samantha and Amanda.
Amanda.
And then it turns to 1920 and they're just like they're laying on the 19 like every 20s reference. So Sam's got a bob,
yes,
of course. She's wearing her mother's clothes and like swinging around beads and a boa.
She's obsessed with Theda Bara,
yes, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And of course we hear that Jessamine is the most stylish mother in the neighborhood. Some would say she looks more like their sister.
Oh my god.
And Samantha wants to be a film star. Basically she's Jessica. She is really
Jessica.
She is
1920s Jessica for real.
Yeah.
Because in fact, so much so she says
oh yeah.
They print the words on the screen when they need to, but I don't want to have this conversation for the 137th time.
It's genetic. Oh my goodness. It's too much.
Yeah, so they're the Watson twins and they are tearing up Detroit.
Oh, they are. And we cut to a few years later. It's 1925. And
so right, like
literally,
15 or 16 at this stage?
They're born in 1920. So, oh no, sorry, they're born in.
Yeah, they could have.
They're 12 in 1920.
Okay,
sorry. So they're
yeah.
17 in 1925. Yeah. So basically, they like pile on the 20s references with the trell. It's like
so
Amanda puts on her cloche.
Yes.
And have you got it there?
Amanda pulled her favorite cloche hat on over her new bob and made sure both her dangling pendant earrings were clipped in place. The long string of matching beads around her neck swung back and forth as she walked into the dining room.
Do a little Charleston soundtrack.
So
I have actually done several 1920s dance classes.
Really?
I actually can do the Charleston.
Oh my
yeah.
god.
And quite a lot of 20s dance routines.
Cool.
Yeah, I did tap for years when I was a kid, and then I did I don't think it can't have been called old timey dancing. I know it wasn't. But
that is the technical term, you know.
Yes.
Old timey dancing.
But we did do dance routines, like the Big Apples, but it was so much fun.
Cool.
Yeah. So I feel a kinship
Aww.
with the twins. Oh, and we find out that they have a brother called Harry, and he's writing home about a friend. Oh, what's his friend's name?
Oh.
It's Ted Wakefield!
Of course it is! Fucking Ted Wakefield.
Ugh. Yeah. Wakefield. So Samantha becomes inexplicably obsessed with him.
She does. But there's just a great bit when he's kind of reading out the letter from Harry, who's like, this introduces Ted into the mix.
Yeah.
And Samantha is younger by 4 minutes.
Just I
didn't
even like notice
the Wakefields, yeah.
Oh my lord.
She also says, what a load of hokum.
Hey! Oh my god, my notes just say page 128, so much OTG.
Oh, big time, yeah, because at one point Samantha exclaims, cuts pajamas.
Oh, and you think that's bad slash good.
Just
good,
you
obviously.
Wait.
The twins go to a party.
Mm.
And it's just like some school. It's with their school pals. And in walks. I think like he was in their class at some stage, but now he's gone, left. How do they know him?
Yeah, it's like Jessica.
No.
Now I'm doing it. Samantha like dated him for a little bit.
Oh, okay.
But wasn't that into him?
His name is Kevin Hughes.
Yeah, and now you might think Kevin Hughes is just someone who plays intermediate hurling. However, in this case...
Or like your friend's brother.
Just like, okay. Kevin Hughes in this case, he's a lounge lizard.
Oh, he's a literal All-timey gangster! He literally is!
It's so good. He's a boy in a long raccoon coat and baggy white pants. Oh. His hair perfectly parted in the center and slicked to a patent leather shine. He held a long cigarette holder.
Oh, God.
Look into my veins.
So happy. We're both so happy about Kevin.
We love him so much.
Yeah. Samantha is just like, how did I date that gangster?
It's she's not into him, but... he just kind of, he's a bootlegger.
Yeah, and he started off as a low-class hoodlum, see? But now he's worked his way up. He's bootlegging booze. And he refers to Samantha as the dame I was too low-class for. And he wants to take her to a speakeasy, see? It's called the Cellar Door.
The way I hear it, he's running hooch.
Ooh. And he is. She turns him down.
Oh,
doesn't want to go to the Cellar Door.
Yeah, she's not interested.
No, she's obsessed with.
She reckons he looked pathetically hopeful, but he was the same old low down, big headed boar in a new fancy package.
Oh, fancy pants. She's still obsessed with Ted Wakefield, even though she's never seen him.
Yeah,
it's very weird.
Did they see a picture of him? Maybe.
Oh, they.
It was like a photo of
him. Yeah, they did see a photo, but she never met him.
No,
she's really obsessed. Mm. But he's coming to town.
Hmm.
So she's going to meet him. And of course, she fancies him when they meet. When they do, Henry takes them, or Harry and Ted take the twins to Jazz Club, the cafe car. And Amanda bonds with Ted because they both love Hemingway, like great, great aunt, like knees. The tastes don't change either. And they chat with C.C. Earle, King of the Trumpets.
Yeah.
He's, they've got three people of colour in one book.
This is like a bonanza compared to literally any other book.
Oh, it's so much more. And he has a proper conversation. He's charming. Yeah. And he's a charming, talented gent.
He's cool.
He's funny. And it turns out that he gave Ted his big journalistic break because Ted wants to be a journalist.
Yeah, and there's some big convoluted story about how he talks about his granddad and gets this exclusive thing, but then mentions his grandfather, Theodore Wakefield.
The OW, who struck gold
and took a job with the circus before that. So it's like, okay, we get it, you guys. Yeah.
And then lost all his gold money. So somehow this story persuades Earl you can interview me. I'll give you an exclusive.
It was all just a big excuse to work in. This is his grandson, you guys.
Then it says, Earl gave a laugh that sounds like his trumpet call. Like, does he laugh like... like every time he laughs. Yeah. Oh, my Lord. Oh, I like him. Ted has charmed Samantha. He's even better in the flesh. And she gushes over him, my notes say, in OTG style.
Oh.
On page
145. Okay.
We only have one book between us.
Yes, I agree.
So we had to share. We had to share this one. She's very enthusiastic about him.
Oh, this bit. Samantha whirled her pillow around and stopped right in front of Amanda. Of course, silly. I'm drunk on love. Oh, Amanda, isn't Ted just darb? The berries, the bee's knees.
See?
Darb.
I don't know. Oh, I want to know, though. So Amanda goes downstairs to write a terrible poem about Ted.
Oh, God.
Because she fancies him too, of course.
Yeah, because they both kind of have a good bit in common with him. Like, he is actually quite suitable for either one because he's really into movies as well.
Motion pictures.
He likes the talkie scene.
He does.
So that's why, what's-her-face, proto-Jessica, Samantha, thinks he might be into her because they're getting on great talking about the motion pictures and actresses and stuff. But then he's also into writing, so he kind of suits Amanda too, so yeah.
So she goes down, she writes a poem, and he's downstairs as well and tells her she has a poet's soul. And they kiss.
They do, yeah.
She doesn't tell Samantha, of course, and the next day Samantha is so in love with Ted Wakefield that we're told she Charlestoned her way into the kitchen. Like, oh yeah, we know, it's the 20s. We get it, like, it's the 20s. Fine.
No, seriously, it's the 20s.
Yes. And Amanda now is writing to Ted secretly.
Secretly, yeah, because she knows that her sister is mad about him as well. So she kind of feels a bit guilty about
Yeah, communication.
Kind of secret romance.
Clandestine.
And also she's going out with a dude called Jeff.
Oh yeah, yeah. So it's like, yeah, no time. He didn't really do very much.
Poor Jeff.
But she's broken up with him now.
Yes, she does eventually break up with him, in fairness.
But then Samantha finds a letter in the mailbox to Amanda from Ted.
From Ted, yeah.
And she steams it open.
Yeah, it's old-timey craftiness right there.
It really is. And she is enraged.
Yeah, she's
and
furious.
And she says, when she reads his letter, she says, "What kind of hookup is this?" She's not wrong.
She's not.
It's pretty cheesy. And the next, like, she doesn't say anything to Amanda, though. But
no.
The next morning when Amanda wakes up, she looks over and Samantha's sleeping with a scowl on her face. Like, she's like they're asleep. Like,
just scowling away.
Yep.
But as well, she also mentions good, loving, caring Amanda had turned Benedict Arnold, which is Jessica's burn for Elizabeth.
Yeah, the ultimate Wakefield traitor reference.
Like, for once, it's really consistent. Like, ridiculously consistent.
Yeah, so many other times there's no consistency in these books at all. Anyway.
The really insignificant stuff, though. Super consistent.
So then Ted writes to Amanda. Samantha is obviously like on the lookout for letters now.
Yeah.
She's intercepting them.
Yeah.
So he writes to Samantha, or he writes to Amanda announcing a visit and asking her for a date to the cafe car.
Mm.
But Samantha burns it.
Yeah.
And so the day that Ted arrives, Amanda has no idea he's coming, and she's working late at the Klaxon.
Yes, the school paper.
Yeah.
The Klaxon. It's great. And yeah, fucking Samantha sabotages the office. She wrecks the gap. So that Amanda and the rest of the guys that work on the paper have to stay late at school, and basically it's her kept out of the way.
Yeah, it is a cunning plan. I'll give her that.
It's
she's very
devious, yeah.
So she intercepts Ted, is like, oh, well, she's... Amanda's at school. I'll take you to school.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay.
Okay.
And then she leads him up to Overlook Point.
Oh, sorry. I get confused with Miller's Point.
I know.
Overlook Point. Yep. Miller's Valley.
And she tries to seduce him.
Yeah.
But he is not having it. She's just like, dude, I'm going out with your sister.
But I think he also thought at this point that Amanda had come clean and told Samantha what the story was. Because he's like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
I love your sister.
And she's like, oh, love her.
Yeah. Mm.
So she's really angry.
Yeah, she's furious. That also sounds familiar, doesn't it? Someone getting turned down and being absolutely furious.
And then doing something disproportionate
because
he wasn't your boyfriend. Though, you know, I mean, she's young and stupid, so whatever. And Amanda did know that she fancied him. So she goes to Kevin Hughes in a speakeasy, see? And he's full of old-timey gangster chat.
Oh, he sure is. So she makes her way in through the speakeasy, heads turned towards her. Well, a dame, announced a raspberry-nosed man slumped at the bar. A gorgeous dame!
Oh, I'm literally clapping my thighs with joy.
So giddy.
At this ridiculousness. So Kevin is like, when she turns up. And she points out that his lack of discretion has got people talking. Because he's a really shit criminal.
Oh, he sucks.
Like, he just goes around boasting.
And his name sucks as well. He doesn't sound like a criminal. He needs to be called, like, Muggsy.
Or Educated Isidore.
Yeah. He's doing it wrong.
Oh, you should read some Damon Runyon. Because Damon Runyon, if you like old-timey gangster talk, he's the writer on whose stories Guys and Dolls are based. And his stories are so funny.
Cool.
And the characters have the most amazing names, like Society Mex.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. And they're hilarious.
Oh.
And Dancing Dan. So yeah, they could have worked harder with Kevin Hughes.
Yeah. Yeah. Kevin, definitely.
I don't know, like horse face jewels or something like that. Like,
literally anything other than Kevin Hughes, basically.
Use your
no offense to any Kevin Hugheses,
no,
but like,
actually,
it's
I'm
not
sure,
very gangster sounding.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody Irish is listening to this knows someone called
surely.
Kevin Hughes. It is the most bog standard average Irish name you could think of. It's like the Irish equivalent of Joe Smith.
It's just,
something.
Yeah, it's quite generic.
Yeah. She points out like he should have been a criminal, but she has a plan to divert the feds' attention.
Ooh.
Another way. So that night, Amanda has tried to like make peace with her by leaving like a poem in her bed or something, and she just ignored it. And when Amanda's asleep, Samantha dresses up as Amanda, wakes up Ted saying Earl needs him and it's an emergency.
Yeah.
And she snogs him. Yeah. A bit creepy.
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, that's a very Jessica thing too.
It is, yeah.
It's a ruse because she's planted liquor in his car.
Jesus.
He gets arrested.
It's like really that is shit. Like, it's properly messing with his life. Like, yeah.
Yeah, like he's going to have a criminal record being a bootlegger. Yeah. Like an actual gangster.
It's quite serious.
And then she's like, oh, she lets him think that she's Amanda. And it's like, I know you tried to get off with my sister. It's like Jess and Todd all over again.
Kind of is, yeah. She also gives head about them being a double-crossing fink.
Oh, that's good. And Amanda reads in the paper the next day that, like, this college student's been arrested. And she goes to the police station and finds out the truth. They're just like, oh, you were here last night. And she's like, no, I wasn't.
Yeah.
And it turns out that, and this doesn't really make sense, that he's been let go for, like, lack of evidence. They found a giant thing of booze in his car.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That seems like evidence.
Yeah, a little bit.
Maybe they didn't have proof that he was going to sell it, or I don't know what the penalty was if you just
basically he's gone.
Yeah.
And out of there.
There's a great scene where she comes home and Samantha is in front of the mirror putting on lipstick, and Amanda seizes the lipstick out of her hands and writes snake in huge letters on the mirror.
It's really badass.
Yeah,
love it.
Cool. And Samantha's like, oh well, we're even now.
Yeah. What?
You literally got my boyfriend arrested.
Arrested, like, yeah.
No, you're not even. And she tells her what she thinks of her, which is like something you kind of wish Elizabeth had done to Jessica all the time. Samantha goes off to Hollywood and becomes a big star. Now, by the way, there's a few things that we will... this is not the first or the only example of this. There was no fucking way if Jessica Wakefield's great-grandmother had been a Hollywood star in the 20s that she wouldn't be banging on about it.
Constantly talking about it. Yeah, it would have come up for,
like,
sure.
They never even retconned it after this book appeared.
No,
like,
there's just no mention at all of, like, oh, Hollywood starlet, like, yeah, in the family. Come on.
I know.
She'd be all over that.
I know. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, she goes off and becomes a star, and meanwhile, Amanda stays behind and never marries.
Mm, she also never forgives her, pretty much. She's
she's pretty hardcore.
She's cold,
She's miserable, but her only consolation is a wooden rose of lost love, which her mother has given to her. You know, it's been passed down ever since Alice. And Samantha gets married to a guy called Jack Lewis.
Mm, he's like a reporter or something, or a journalist.
But Amanda doesn't attend the wedding.
Nope. She stays home.
Yeah. Her parents go, like, and Harry, but she's just like, no, I'm not going to marry that bitch. It's part of me that mars her. The part of me is just like, okay, let it go. Like,
I mean, come on.
But then tragedy strikes.
It does. But actually, right before that, sorry, there's a bit when she's reading about the wedding in the paper. And then part of the article is, if the rumours going around Hollywood are right, Miss Watson won't be fitting into her perfect size 6 dress for much longer. It's like, even in the 20s, there's still a perfect size 6. These fucking twins.
Just in case you were wondering, just, like, don't worry.
Yeah. Never not perfect.
Yes, remember. Exactly the same.
So Samantha has a baby, basically.
But then she's dying in childbirth.
Yeah.
And Amanda hears this and rushes cross country to be by her side. Aww. And it's genuinely quite sad.
It is. Yeah, she kind of gets there just in time.
Yeah, Samantha's literally dying.
Yeah.
And Samantha's like, look after baby Marjorie.
Aww.
And it is really sad. It is sad.
It is.
Well, I can't pretend it isn't.
Yeah.
And then cut to 1935, and where are we? We're finally in Sweet Valley.
Yay!
So, by the way, I'm just saying that in the actual Sweet Valley books, when we hear about Alice's family, her parents, like, there's some books where, like, Christmas specials and stuff where the grandparents come, and I think they come from, like, the Midwest or something.
Yeah, there's
no indication that they're, like,
this doesn't tie up at all.
Yeah, their grandmothers grew up there. But anyway, so Jack and Amanda and Marjorie all live there, and Amanda is the teacher in Sweet Valley High.
Mm, she's an English teacher.
Yeah, and they seem to have a really, you know, kind of, like, she's basically been a mother to Marjorie.
Yeah.
And Jack really appreciates it.
Yeah.
But now he's being posted to France.
Mm-hmm.
And he just thinks, like, look, I have to take...
He's going
to
take Marjorie with her, him. So, yeah.
And he says, like, you should come too.
Yeah.
You'd love France. And she's like, no.
My students need me.
Yeah, like, they don't need you that much.
Yeah. No, also, just a side note, one of her students...
Oh, yeah.
Sean. He's a joker called Walter Egbert.
Oh, who could he be related to?
It was 1939, and Marjorie's been living in France for a few years, and we get a letter. Get some letters back and forth. Amanda writes and is like, oh, Walter Egbert is going to turn into Superman and bring you back to Sweet Valley High. Because, of course, everyone's obsessed with anyone Jessica Elizabeth like.
Yeah, a Wakefield descendant.
Yes. And it's 1939. The war has actually broken out at this stage. It's late 1939. Yeah. But Jack is like, oh, be grand.
Yeah.
That's 1940. Optimistic. Oh, wait.
Shit, there are hella fucking Nazis around you guys.
They're in a little town called Valley.
Which, can we talk about how that's Sweet Valley in French?
Oh my God! Oh my God, I didn't even think. My brain just read that as D-E-U-X. Like I said,
I didn't cap it until I wrote it down in my notes and I was like, Valley. Oh, son of a bitch!
I was like, Valley the two? What? Oh my God. Mm-hmm. My brain just thought, yep. Oh Lord, Valley that is amazing.
Sweet Valley.
Sweet Valley. Oh Lord. So they're there with Mademoiselle Pignet. Mm-hmm. And she's their housekeeper, and her and Jack keep whispering, and they're like, oh, we're going to send you back to America because it's not safe.
Yeah, it's not safe here anymore.
And then it's, so this goes on for like, I don't know, a year and a half.
Yeah, it's a bit
just
of judging
by history. Because like, this is 1940, and America doesn't enter the war to the end of 1941.
Yeah.
So Marjorie's an enemy alien, and her dad is arrested.
Yeah, she kind of, what was it? He was going to send her back, and then she kind of suddenly realizes he's been arrested and it's like, oh shit, I'm in fuckloads of danger, yeah, basically. What the hell am I going to do?
Yes. So Mademoiselle Pignet helps her hide in like a winery, in a sort of vineyard. Yeah. And there's a Jewish girl called Sophie Burke. Again, somebody else was in a wasp.
Yeah.
Like for, you know, there's more, like we said, in this book.
Actual diversity.
Yeah.
People who
aren't white Anglo-Saxon Protestants.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're in this vineyard, like just in a cellar for a whole year.
That is just long. The two of them, like, yeah, it's quite grim.
And they seem to cope with it surprisingly well. Considering they don't see daylight.
Yeah, because they sleep during the day and then kind of sneak out at night a little bit just
to
like,
a fresh
be
air.
Outside, basically, and come back in again. It's all very fraught and kind of scary.
Sophie tells her all about her brother Jacques.
Yes.
And because all these people, when they just hear about random men, if they've never seen, are just like, oh, fancy
him. Just immediately fall in love with all these lads.
If they've never seen.
Like, oh, his name is Jacques, that'll do.
Yeah. And there's quite a good bit there when Amanda gets a message from somebody who says, like, I'm a loyal servant of France. Sorry about my terrible and offensive French accent.
It's all got a bit hello over here. Yes.
But she gets a message that Marjorie is alive. And there's actually kind of a good point where she's like looking at her students and they just don't give a shit about the war because it doesn't affect them.
And actually, who was that dude? Because we didn't really find out.
Yeah,
was he?
I don't know. He's a friend of a friend of a friend of Mademoiselle Pignet.
But basically, word has gotten to Amanda that Marjorie's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it's 1942 and Jacques turns up finally. Yeah. Of course, he's very handsome. And okay, now I'm slightly obsessed with the French Resistance and SOE agents, like agents who are like being dropped in.
Yes, amazing.
So I'm always slightly fascinated by this. But Jacques turns up and asks Marjorie to help the Resistance where he's a wireless operator. Now, the average life expectancy of a wireless operator, these were trained agents who came to France, was 6 weeks.
Whoa.
Like, I do not think they're going to go, here's some random girl who's like living in a cellar for a year.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, she speaks French and English, that'll do.
Yeah, that's enough. So poor old Sophie's left hiding in the wine cellar on her own.
Yeah.
While Marjorie is constantly on the move.
Yeah, but she's pretty badass though, in fairness.
Yeah, like, no, it is pretty cool.
Tapping out her secret messages
like,
and stuff.
Oh, wow.
And her code name is North Star.
Yes. And Jacques is her control in the network.
Mm.
But of course, they fall in love.
Of course.
And meanwhile, just as an aside, she helps send a pilot, an American pilot called Charles Robertson, across to Spain. By the way, if you ever get your chance to get your hands on an amazing 70s drama series called Secret Army, I've been watching it on DVD recently.
Ooh.
And it's about the Belgian Resistance.
Cool.
And it is hardcore. Like,
really?
Marjorie would not like the stuff that goes on. She would not survive. It's really amazing, and it's mad because Allo Allo, it turns out, was a parody of it.
Oh, no
which
way.
I had no idea. So initially when I'm watching it, I'm like, hang on, there's a pistachioed cafe out there. He's having an affair with like one of his waitresses.
The waitress.
And they're in the resistance and they're hiding British airmen in the cellar. And there's like a...
Listen very carefully.
Yeah,
I've seen this only once.
But and then I looked up, it up and it was like, like it was clear that
That's what they were doing.
Was based on it.
Yeah.
But it's so dark and it's so good. And I kept thinking like, they would have shot Marjorie in the head if they thought that she could possibly betray
she kinda,
anything to
she
them.
She kind of charms her way past like a Nazi soldier as well at some point to kind of catch her out on her own at night.
She is good.
So
she is good.
You know, yeah, she has her moments.
But then they find out that like that Sophie has been captured.
Yes.
And they concoct a very unconvincing plan that they'll Jacques will contact an old friend who's now a collaborator.
Yeah.
If that's the correct French, probably not. And he's like, oh, we can swap this American girl
for Sophie, because they're kind of saying that like Sophie like wouldn't be worth as much to the soldiers.
Yeah.
Whereas
she would.
Marjorie would. Yeah. Oh, because her dad, they reckon he's suspected of planning to
being an agent
and work
arrested
within the prisoner camp or something. Yeah. So they reckon she'll be more thought after than Sophie.
But you know, I just don't think that they would let a random, like that the SS would not be like all over this. I'm just like, oh, let's just leave it to this random kid called Pierre. He's going to turn up and they're like, oh, there's a few Germans around. But, you know, also the resistance, if they would not risk a girl like Marjorie falling into the hands of the enemy where they would literally torture stuff out of her. Like she knows loads of confidential information. They just wouldn't do it.
Anyway,
any historians who are experts, please come in. I was just like, that wouldn't happen.
It's just not having it.
That wouldn't happen.
Man, I've watched this show. This is bullshit.
But anyway, they don't give up Marjorie. They get Sophie out, but Jacques is killed because, of course, the whole place is full of Nazis.
Yeah, they're on like a train platform and it all kicks off and there's loads of gunfire and poor Jacques is downed.
Yes. And Sophie gives Marjorie her false paper and is like, oh, Wakefield must leave the country.
Please save
yourself.
Even
though I'm Jewish and it's 1942,
oh,
I'm going to stay.
Yeah, go, blonde American girl. Like, you'll be fine.
So she says like, no, I will stay and fight with the resistance for the sake of my brother. And Marjorie's like, okay.
Well, she kind of doesn't give her much of a choice.
Yeah, that is
She
true.
Does actually lock Marjorie into like a train car and
slips
the papers under the door.
Bye.
And she's like, I'm out of here. You can't stop me.
Yeah, that is true.
So in fairness, I think Marjorie probably would have put up more of a fight.
Yeah,
had she been given a chance.
That is true.
But anyway.
So she goes home and she marries Charles Robertson.
Yes, the pilot.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's all good.
And then it cuts to the 60s and Alice is doing a family tree and she puts in symbols of all the couples that we've read about in the book. And whoever owned the book that I have, because it's obviously secondhand, some kid did that.
I thought that was you.
No, it wasn't me.
Like from years ago, just, you know, doodling away. But yeah, because I was reading like them drawing in the things. And I was like, hang on a second. I went back and checked. And yeah, some kid actually drew in the pictures. It was really cute.
It is very cute. And it wasn't me.
Okay.
I
don't know how long you've had this.
So now we move. Obviously, the Old Timey Gangster bit is the best part of the entire book.
Oh, there was so much good stuff in there. Yeah.
But this is pretty good.
It's,
it's the late 60s and it's Flower Child Alice.
Oh, yeah.
And even the conservative frat is in, she's in what, the University of Southern California?
Yeah, something vague like that.
Yeah. And even the conservative frat has gone psychedelic. And her friend Jenny says, the times, they are a-changing. Which reminds me of the amazing bit in Hairspray, like the real original Hairspray, where Divine's character, editor of that, turns to her husband and goes, it's the times, Wilbur. They're changing. I don't think this is meant to be funny.
But like, yeah, pretty much for this whole section, any music that's mentioned is basically just a Bob Dylan song.
Yeah, it's all Dylan. Like,
it's just all Dylan all the time.
And they overhear somebody say, oh, it's a lovely lazy painter. And who is it? It is. Batman. Father of Bruce.
Hank Padman, my God. Look at him there.
He's wearing beads to be more in tune with the feeling of campus. On campus, sorry.
He's impossibly handsome.
He's Bruce-like. And he's like, oh, you're too pretty to work.
Ugh.
What?
Yeah.
And then some other time she's sketching on campus and he's like, oh, your work is like Degas. And then he's like, oh, of course, we've got loads of Degas paintings in the house. Yeah, of course you do.
Whatever. Honey. Yeah. Yeah, he kind of pursues Alice, but she's just kind of not interested because he's a square man.
Yeah. But then the students are having a sit-in because a lefty professor has been fired for his civil rights work.
Yeah.
But they're starving because they've been, you know.
The administration are trying to starve him out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then what happens? Someone arrives.
There's a helicopter.
And someone yells about, I will keep feeding the people until their demands are met. And a tank!
Yay!
Is he good? Can it be? Has he seen the light?
But yeah, he's just dropping a load of food with like a pot pie and everything or something. Yeah, comes down. Like, it's like, this sounds really messy, lads.
Yeah, it does. Well, all the protesters sort of grab the food in their hands and yeah. Alice like rips the sandwich open with her teeth practically. Yeah. Oh, it's like, what's in the dip? Like, let's have some dip.
Oh, dip break.
Dip break. How's the dip tasting? Let's see who's got better.
Does it mature? Yeah, thumbs up from Anna.
Still good. Still I hope I wasn't too near the microphone. I'm did turn all the way around. She hears that, oh, he risked his inheritance.
Yeah, by helping to do this food drop.
So she's like, oh, maybe he isn't so bad.
Maybe he's all right.
And they start going out.
Yeah, she starts dating him.
And he's like, oh, I can help. Give me the finer things in life. I only like the best. And he's like, oh, if you were in a room full of, if I took you to the Louvre and you were in a room full of works by Leonardo da Vinci. And she's like, you mean I'd see the Mona Lisa? It's like, yeah, you're in the Louvre. Like, yeah. What else are you going to go and look at? God's sake.
He's trying to make a point here.
Yeah. She's impressed by him because he says like, oh, you made me a better person, and yeah. Everyone on campus loves him. They're all like, hey, Batman. Even the hippies in their like leather waistcoats and things.
Yeah, his straight dark hair had grown longer since they'd started seeing each other, and he'd traded in his establishment clothes for a pair of patched bell bottoms and a groovy vest.
A groovy vest. I looked at what he was wearing before. I imagine wearing a sort of a suit. And the next thing we know, he's like torn them off, put on his like tie dyes. But he's still not perfect. He still flirts with other girls and like father like son. Some would say.
Oh, they get engaged though.
No, we're not yet.
Not yet.
They are engaged now.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
They are. And so that's why she's really pissed off because he's like flirting with some random girl.
Yeah, some girl named Brenda. Whatever, Brenda.
Who are you, Brenda? And she probably turns out to be like, I don't know, Todd's mom.
Oh, probably, yeah. She'll be back with a vengeance to make food, I suppose. Yeah. You can be sure of it.
Always happens. She nearly drowns. She's at a beach party when this is happening. And she goes into the sea and she nearly drowns.
Yeah, she just kind of swims off in a fit and she's like, fucking Hank. And then, yeah, gets into trouble. And actually, the whole paragraph about her getting into trouble in the water and then being rescued is the exact same as the start with Alice.
Yeah, it's word for word.
Like word for word. Yep. It's brilliant.
And then she wakes up and she's looking into the eyes of Ned Wakefield.
Oh my God.
And she feels a sort of a psychic bond.
Ooh, she feels like she knows him. Which, like I mean, no, she doesn't.
Yeah. They are hinting at the supernatural in this. Like,
a little bit, yeah.
They're
imprinting on each other through the ages.
Oh, God. Well, we'll get to the very end. It all starts feeling a bit Rosemary's Baby. But anyway, she bonds with them over their love of Blowing in the Wind.
Oh, of course. There's no other music.
Yes, in the 60s. Like, oh, you don't like the birds? No, we never heard of the birds.
Nope.
Who? Dylan. She's engaged to Hank. So
yeah, and she keeps kind of seeing Ned around campus, but it turns out he is slightly pursuing her, but then realizes she's engaged and backs
off.
He's
like, oh, okay, sorry. Yeah, he asks her out. And,
yeah.
And she finds out he's a lawyer and he's working pro bono for all the protesters.
Great guy.
Like, cool, progressive lawyer. Yeah. He sort of gives up on that. Oh, no, he's
still a lawyer,
sort of
but.
No, but a sort of progressive. You know, well, he would write stuff like.
Yeah, actually.
So she's getting married now, and Ted rings her bell on the day of her wedding, which is a bit of a dick move. Like,
literally the morning of her wedding, throwing a wrench in there.
Oh, well. And he's being really cool. He's like, whatever, I just want you to know that I'm your friend and I support you.
Yeah, and I hope you guys make each other really happy. And it's, I mean, the sentiment is nice, but the timing's a bit off.
Yes. And then she remembers how Hank toasted her at their engagement party. And he referred to as the woman who will be by my side as I make my way in life.
Mm, 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 mm.
That's not good.
Nope.
And she's actually, like, she's at the Patmans' house because they're getting married there.
Oh, that's right. And actually, yeah, because she wanted something kind of chill, but the Patmans wanted something really fancy. So it's like, Alice had imagined a casual celebration, perhaps a clam bake on the beach. What is it with these people and their fucking clams? The hot clam special.
Oh, don't. On the beach. Oh, not when I'm looking at that dip.
Oh, no. Don't ruin the dip.
Put me off. No, need more dip. So yeah, she peers out. She's like, "Oh, there's Hank with his pals." But then she overhears him talking to his chums.
Yeah,
and he's got some revelations, and they're not good.
No, because yeah, someone makes a comment about all the hippies at the wedding. He's like, mm-hmm. "Oh, Alice's friends." It's like, wait a minute, I thought they were your friends too.
Yeah, they were all over him when he was going around campus. But it turns out he was just sort of sucking up to them and helping the protesters to make himself more popular.
Yeah, turn me into the biggest celebrity on campus.
Is it vague as a goal? Like, yeah, you really get anything
like Jessica
about
wanting to be the star of the party. It's like, this means nothing. What are you talking about?
Why is this a big deal? Why would you hire a helicopter just to be popular?
But basically, he's kind of still a dick and he's just doing all this stuff for show.
Yeah.
He doesn't actually believe it.
Yes, exactly. And she's just like, oh my God. And she realises, oh my God, he probably started that rumour about him as him risking his inheritance
to make himself look good.
Yeah. So she breaks up with him and he's like, I order you to leave. And she's like, okay, I made the right decision.
Yeah. Fuck this.
Yeah. And she runs. She runs away. And she's free.
Yay.
And she turns up at Ned's house in her wedding dress. Yeah. Very dramatic.
Very.
And there's no answer, but then she hears blowing in the wind.
A fucking blowing
going out of the window. And she yells, and he comes down, and they kiss. And finally, a Wakefield and a Larson or Robertson, whatever she is. See,
finally,
if they change their surnames, they would be a consistent line.
Yeah, they need to keep with the maternal line, just be Larson all the way down.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, they've come together. Destiny has had its way.
Oh, it's finally worked out.
Yeah. And then the last... the last bit is, this is the Rosemary's Baby bit.
Mm.
It's the birth.
Oh God.
Of you know who. And can you read the last passage out where it describes the last sentence or so, describes our, when Alice looks down at her offspring.
In their perfect identical faces, Jessica and Elizabeth Wakefield held the secrets of the future. It's such a weird thing to end on, isn't it?
I know. Like, what future? Are they like the Antichrist? Like, what is this?
Oh God, what are they going to do?
He has his father's eyes. Oh, it's so scary. Oh. So that's the end of the Wakefield saga.
Oh, that was great.
And it's a lot of fun.
It's so fun. It's gas how, like, anytime there's a set of twins, one of them has to randomly die to just kind of keep the family tree a bit tidy.
Or not have any children.
Yeah. It's like, quick, kill one off.
Yeah. No, only
Let's
one.
Tidy this thing up.
Oh, good Lord. And did you manage to get any stats out of this?
Ridiculousness. Of a sort. Hang on. Okay, yes. Ooh. So I just went with the Larson blondness because, again, she started it. So anytime... any proto Wakefields were blonde. There was like 11 mentions of blondness.
Sorry, I was eating another.
Was eating chips again.
I was eating more dip. 11 mentions. That is quite a lot.
Yeah, and the blue green eyes get 6 goes.
Very
down
consistent.
Through the years.
Any notable outfits for our heroes?
We possibly just mentioned them when we were going through it.
Oh, there was the coat. The Kevin Hughes. Boring name. Amazing
Hughes.
Outfit.
But yeah, incredible outfit. Mm. There's a mention of Jessamine when the two little twins are kind of dressing up and messing around in her clothes. It's like, Sam, what are you doing with that glass? And mother's best boa. So I love that Jessamine has like a selection of
Samantha.
Boas.
Is that Samantha?
Well, this is the kids, as Samantha and Amanda as kids. Okay. But Jessamine is the mother.
Yes. Oh, I'm so confused.
So it's just, I know, it's a lot.
Yeah, sorry about that.
What else? There's, that was Kevin and his amazing stuff. Oh, and the 60s part with Alice. It's like they keep mentioning her fringed bag.
Ooh.
It's like about 4 times. Like, she reached into her fringed bag. She threw her fringed bag over her shoulder. It's like, okay, she's a hippie.
She's got some fringe going on.
A lot of fringe going on. And then like her friend has like a flower painted on her face.
Oh,
at some
yeah,
point. Yeah, it's all very typical.
It's on the
stuff.
Nose.
Very much so, yeah.
But there's so much joy. And we will return to the sagas because in case you didn't know, they also made The Fowlers of Sweet Valley.
There is more.
And The Patmans of Sweet Valley. And actually, in a rare example of anything in these things being brought up again, I'm pretty sure that there are way later Sweet Valley High books, like past the 100 mark, where they all start going a bit weird,
yeah,
where Bruce and Elizabeth find out about this secret romance Hank and
Alice. Because it does say that she keeps the secret even from her daughters. And it's like, I did kind of wonder, does that ever come back? Because
sure
it seems like
it
a
does.
Big deal. But
yeah,
like,
you're engaged, like literally on your wedding day.
And also, like, it also seems like Bruce's dad would like try and keep Bruce away from the twins or something, or that he didn't really hold a grudge, surely.
Like, it's a very small town.
Yeah.
So you think it would have...
It would have come out, surely. Well, at some point.
It does eventually, but I can't remember how, so we'll come to it.
All right. Yeah.
About 150 books later.
Oh, God.
It'll take a while. Thank you, everybody, for joining us for this Christmas episode. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did, even though I did get very pedantic about practices of the French Resistance, which, you know, to be honest, I'm not an historian in any sense of the word. So, you know, if anybody is, please correct me on the practices of how realistic this book is. I just kept thinking, like, no,
that wouldn't happen.
I've read enough books of the SOE. They wouldn't allow this.
Although, yeah, on the SOE, like, I just wish every World War II movie was just about an SOE agent instead.
Like, I was in France.
So tired of movies about what the lads were up to during the war.
I know, give me some women.
Come on.
Dropping out of, what's her name, Noor Khan, who's like a Sikh princess.
Oh, yes.
Oh, what was her first? Because they all had code names, so I always mix up their real names.
Yeah,
and their
like Nancy Wake, the White Mouse.
Yes.
Like, there's just loads of awesome ladies who were just doing really cool shit during the war. And it's like, where are their movies?
When
please.
I was in France on my holidays, this is completely off topic, but I was in the Dordogne, and there's a few resistance museums, and there was one that had, and you could touch them, actual like crates that. That were parachuted down to help SOE agents with the actual parachutes on them.
Fucking hell.
And they were like wireless. They were little wirelesses like inside books.
Oh my God.
I was in heaven.
That's
great. Like, that, poking things.
That's like the anime museum basically.
Yeah, it pretty
like
much
they just
was.
Made it for you.
There was a blouse that a female resistant had made out of parachutes. So from an SOE agent's parachute.
Fantastic.
Yeah. It was pretty incredible.
Love that.
So I have to say that when it was Sweet Valiant and like kind of SOE agents, she's kind of,
yeah.
She's not an official agent.
No.
Which is why it's...
She was in the resistance.
Yes.
Resistance.
So why it's a bit problematic that she's sort of treated the same as somebody who's had like proper training.
Yeah.
Which is a child. But anyway, the fact that there is so much to talk about in this ridiculous book says a lot.
It does.
not so much historical background to debate. So, if you have any thoughts on this or you want to correct our historical knowledge,
feel free. We're often wrong, as it turns out.
Yes, all the time. And now we're high on dip.
Woo! Jingle bells.
Jingle bells. So, if you want to get in touch with us, you can contact us on Twitter at svhpodcast.com.
Yeah, you can send us an email at svhpodcast@gmail.com.
And special thanks to Elizabeth, who got in touch with us through this very means to send us this delicious dip.
Thank you so much. And thank you to her mum, Penny, as well.
Thank you, Penny. We love the dip. And we've got a supply each of the mix to keep us going through Christmas.
Very exciting.
You know, it's all we're going to eat. We're going to have heart attacks. This may be the last episode.
Totally worth it.
And we are proud members of the Headstuff Podcast Network, and you can follow the Headstuff Podcast Network and find out more about their amazing podcasts at HS Pod Network and this Headstuff. And that's it. Only remains for us to say Merry Christmas, everybody.
Have a great Christmas.
And we will see you soon with book number 11.
Yes, we'll be back in the new year to talk about Too Good to Be True.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Bye.
I love those bells.
This is how it's always been. I'm on the outside looking in.
HPN, the Headstuff Podcast Network. See headstuff.org for more details.
Being a parent can be really challenging. It's normal to feel uncertain about whether you're doing the right things to raise healthy and happy children. That's why Child and Family Resource Network focuses on connecting pregnant parents and those with kids under the age of 5 with free support services to help them build confidence in their parenting journey. Everyone deserves to have someone they can turn to for support with parenting. Visit childandfamilyresourcenetwork.org today.